Recording in progress.
All right, Callum, recording is in progress. Jason is with us.
Hi, Callum.
Hello.
How are you?
All right, let's do this thing.
All right, let's get to it. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Goals on Film, Edge of the Crowd's dedicated sports movies podcast. I'm your host, Jason. I've got Stewie and Callum joining me for this one. How are the two of you doing?
Well, thanks, mate. I'm doing pretty well. Excited to talk about a seminal movie from my childhood. Keen to get into it. Callum, how you doing, pal?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. I'm good, yeah. It was a good excuse to rewatch this film, actually, because I remember watching it, like, many years ago. I think it was even in high school. It was one of the movie night movies, you know, that sort of thing. It was just interesting to watch it again at my age now and just kind of see how I view it differently.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Well, we'll get into it. This week we are continuing our foray into the world of basketball movies to coincide with the NBA playoffs that are currently going on. We did semi-pro last week, so if you haven't listened to that one, please go back and listen to it. But this week we'll be taking a look at 1992 basketball. Wikipedia says that it's a comedy. I don't know if it's so much a comedy. It's more a drama, maybe. Maybe we'll go with comedy drama. But either way, we're doing it. White Men Can't Jump. I'll give you a little bit of a synopsis before we get into discussing it. The film follows two streetball hustlers, Sidney Dean and Billy Hoyle. Billy and his girlfriend, Gloria, are on the run from notable monsters, the Stucci brothers, to which Billy owes a gambling debt. But it's the gambling that brings him undone many times throughout the story. In the end, the two, Sidney and Billy, team up for a two-on-two tournament at the end of the movie to work their way up and gain some of that money back that they've both lost. And they enter this two-on-two tournament, ended up winning it against some pretty notable street ballers themselves in the circuit. And they do win with a big alley-oop and a dunk by Billy Hoyle, proving that white men can jump.
Eddie and the Duck. Is it Eddie and the Duck? Yeah. They never saw it coming.
No, they absolutely did not. But looking at that synopsis, obviously having watched it recently, whenever you watched it in the past, what did you two make of the film? What did you like about it?
I found it was quite interesting, like quite engaging throughout. I mean, like, there was never really any points where it was just kind of a scene for the sake of the scene, that everything kind of filled a purpose as you were going, you know, towards the story and the narrative, which admittedly wasn't the strongest, but, you know, it served its purpose and, it kept interesting. And what I liked about this sports film, as opposed to some of the others I've seen in the past, is that it did put a lot of the focus on the basketball, which I quite liked.
Yeah, absolutely. Spot on, mate. It is definitely a good movie. I got to be honest with you, Jace and Callum. I was worried a little bit that this foray down memory lane would be not a great one, but I really enjoyed it. My only real issues, and I said this to you last night, and I'll say it to you right now, Callum. I thought the ending is a little bit abrupt. It leaves heaps of loose ends, not tied up. But otherwise, it's thoroughly enjoyable. I still got plenty of chuckles. I don't know what you guys are talking about. It was definitely a comedy as far as I'm concerned. it was just a nice nostalgic trip down memory lane. It gets a 7 out of 10 for me on Stewie's IMDb ratings.
Awesome. Yeah, no, I think that like that nostalgia is definitely there. I think that I said this to you last night as well, Stuart. It definitely has that 90s feel about it. And I think that, yeah, that comes across in the way that it's shot, the storyline, just, you know, the characters as well, the overall vibe. I think that it definitely has that 90s feel to it. And I think that like it has that like 90s charm as well, which I think that makes it a really enjoyable watch. I think that like for me, I think that like the characters like really interacted really well together, especially Wesley Snipes and Woody Harrelson. I think it may have helped that they were in Wildcats together, which is a 1986 American football film. They played lead roles alongside each other. And so I think that helped in like sort of developing their friendship on the screen for this one as well. And yeah, I think that like just the interactions between those two really made it sort of like, yeah, really sort of memorable. And, you know, you really were invested in what the characters were doing based on that friendship that they were developing, whether it was good or bad, those good or bad moments of the friendship. I think that, yeah, you could really believe that these people really liked each other and, you know, were great friends.
Absolutely. It would not shock either of you to hear that I've done zero preparation for this, but what I can tell you is Woody Harrelson and Wesley Snipes were not the original names they wanted on the marquee. More on that later. How's that for some professional stay podcasting? Tuned.
Oh, I'm interested in learning already. No, I think that, yeah, it's really good. I think that, you know, this movie sort of paved the way for a lot of different things as well. And, yeah, it was just, you know, it's interesting to see as well just like how they sort of translated, you know, stuff happening off the court to on the court or even just like offset onto like the set as well.
Mm-hmm.
I found some pretty interesting facts in terms of like, you know, obviously gambling playing a big role in this movie, and that actually bled into the filming because the actors gambled a lot during shooting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Harrelson actually was hustling Snipes on the set. He got Snipes to bet against him making the dunk at the end of the movie. Of course, withholding information that they had actually lowered the rim prior to his attempt.
Fantastic stuff.
And I have one more fun fact for you before we get into it as well. A total of 65 shots were taken in the movie by various characters. Do you want to guess how many were made and how many were missed?
You go first, Callum.
Sure. I reckon it was, how many shots did you say? 65?
65 in total.
I reckon it was 55 for 65.
I am going to say 58 from 65.
Callum is correct.
Wow.
Bang on. 55 were made and 10 were missed.
This is rigged. Well done, Callum.
All right. Well, we will get into references to history now. Yeah, so I don't think like the history here is about too much about like historical moments in history, but more so, you know, people that appear in the movie that sort of have basketball backgrounds and just some inspirations behind how the film was made.
Mm-hmm.
And so I might start with just the NBA or basketball player appearances, because there are a couple of basketball players that made an appearance in this movie, whether it was credited or uncredited as well,
mm-hmm.
That have basketball backgrounds and NBA backgrounds.
2 seconds. Callum, did you see any NBA players in this movie? Because I saw none.
Oh, look, I think I saw one or two people where I was like, maybe, but I couldn't like confirm.
Yeah.
I couldn't be like put my finger on that's who that is, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Jason's about to let us know. Let us know, Jason. Yeah,
all right. Tell all us. Right, I will. So in terms of NBA players, so Gary Payton made an uncredited appearance as an unidentified street baller.
The glove.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And Marquez Johnson, he had a supporting role as Raymond. He was the one that loses the game to Snipes and Harrelson and goes to his glove box to get the gun. The one that attempts to rob.
I thought he looked tall.
I got my $500 right here. Where's yours?
Hey, look, I said I'll get it. I get it, all right?
Oh,
I got to go to the glove compartment.
Good. Okay, you go to the glove compartment. Then you bring your Sasquatch butt on back here, all right? I got a hot hand.
Shoot, I got your back, Raymond.
What the hell is this? Oh, man, what the hell is the world coming to? Look at this. I ain't got nothing to worry about. Except Kathy Rigby over here. What is this shit? Yo, man, where's this car, man?
Give me your money.
Raymond, that you?
No, this ain't Raymond. Nah.
Take off that goddamn mask and put down that gun.
Shit.
What you trying to do?
Look, man, I got me a couple of chumps on the line over here at the park, man. Come on, man, loan me some money, man. Loan me some money.
Get the fuck out of here.
All right. Hey, look, man, you need you a good gun, man, because there's some crazy motherfuckers walking around this neighborhood. A lot crazier than me. Give me $300 for it.
I'll give you $200.
Oh, come on, man. 275.
250.
All right. But now you robbing me.
So he was a star player for UCLA's 1974-75 National Championship team, and he later played for the Bucks, Clippers, and Warriors in the NBA.
Interesting. So they were the only two?
They were the only two. There was one other local Venice basketball legend. His name was Ron Beals. He appears as the player in the gray beard and purple spandex shorts in the opening game. And then later as a spectator in the background. He's actually considered the pioneer of the jump shot while playing at Loyola in the 59-60 season. Wow. And to this day, he's celebrated annually in Venice with a Ron Beals Day event. And he apparently played every single day up until his death at 78, I believe it was last year, from a stroke.
Incredible. Wow.
The other ones, like I said, like Ron Shelton drew inspiration from his own time on the court. He says that he went one Friday to the park and the park was chained up, he remembers. He said, what happened? And they said, so-and-so got shot, somebody went to the glove box. And, yeah, obviously when someone says that, everyone goes running. And, yeah, he came back and shot the guy dead. And Ron said, what was the issue? He said, block or charge. And, yeah, so that story makes its way into the film, obviously. Like I said.
Wow, that's incredible.
With Raymond obviously not taking lightly to being scammed by Sydney and Billy.
Give me my money. Damn work.
You guys played a really good game.
You damn
motherfucker.
Hey, man, take it easy. Hard goddamn work.
What?
Yeah, you damn. You set me up. Look. Raymond. Now, I seen you hustle, man.
Hey, I ain't never used no goofy white motherfucker like that.
Hey, who you calling goofy white motherfucker?
You goofy white motherfucker.
Let's go. Wait a minute, this is ridiculous, man. Look, Raymond, we are brothers, man. I swear to God, man, I have never seen this white boy before in my life.
Sydney, you out of your mind negotiating with the guy with the blade? You got a wife and kid, man.
How do you know my name? And how come he's talking about your family? What? Wait a minute. You talking about my wife and kid, and you don't know me? Wait a minute, Raymond, cut this motherfucker. Yo, cut that motherfucker right there.
Nah, this. Both you motherfuckers are crazy. I'm going to my car, get my other gun, shoot everybody's ass.
Raymond!
Oh, shit, man, y'all better call my ass!
Raymond!
I'm a bad fucker!
But, yeah, so those sort of similar anecdotes and personal stories in terms of how players perceive one another, definitely Shelton felt like had a need to be included in the movie, which I think is pretty cool.
Anything about the game that they're watching in Sydney's living room when he comes with the missus to get his money back?
No.
Moving right along.
I think the only other thing that I have here, which I think is pretty funny, the Jeopardy categories.
Oh, yeah.
That Gloria trained for.
Yeah.
One was foods that start with the letter Q.
Mm-hmm.
And in this round, as you know, there will be the one daily double in one of these categories. Medicine, superstition, natural disasters, books of the Bible, sports, and finally, foods that start with the letter Q.
She has seven foods that start with Q.
All right, let's go with the foods that start with the letter Q, please.
A game bird related to a partridge. Gloria.
What is a quail?
Correct. Oh, you get to pick again.
Foods that start with the letter Q for 200, please.
Answer. A custard pie often made with cheese and bacon. Gloria.
What is a quiche?
Yes.
Okay, foods with Q for 300, please.
A large edible clam of the Atlantic coast. Gloria.
What is a quahog?
Right.
Okay, foods with Q for 400.
The answer there is the Daily Double. Well, Gloria, you've got the lead with $2,100. You're performing beautifully. How much of that are you going to risk on your knowledge of the subject? Foods that start with the letter Q.
All of it.
According to legend, it was the forbidden fruit in the Garden of Eden.
What is a quince?
Yes.
Obviously, this movie was done in 92, but foods that start with the letter Q actually became a category on Jeopardy in October 1997.
Wow. Okay. So it was a pioneer.
Yeah.
In Jeopardy.
In Jeopardy.
Who would have called that?
I think that's really cool. So, yeah, anyone who obviously saw this movie, I think that they said that there were only seven foods that started with Q, or maybe that was Gloria just.
I think,
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just researching seven of them.
Yeah.
But, yeah, well, there's only five, six categories in Jeopardy.
I think there's five, right?
I think it's six.
Mm. One of us is
because
right.
You go down to 500 for each, so it's 6 by 5, so it's 30 squares, right?
Oh, yeah. Mm, okay. There you go. Callum bringing the maths. Nice. He knows what's up.
Very nice.
Before we move on, you two, off the top of your head, without saying quince, food that starts with Q, go.
Quiche.
Queso.
Very good. I've made my point. Let's move on.
Are those two foods that were actually mentioned in the movie? Or?
I don't think so. I think quiche was. Yeah. I don't think queso was. So top points to Callum. He came with an original.
Yeah, that was probably the $500 one.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
All right. Well, I guess we'll move straight along because we'll go into the depiction, how well this film depicted the sport now. And obviously, you know, it's not so much basketball as opposed to it's more street ball, but obviously we still get, you know, basketball rules and basketball actual play and everything like that. So how did you guys see the play of basketball in this movie?
Listen, I thought it was portrayed pretty well. You know, being a white kid that went to a private school, I didn't play a lot of street ball. It may shock you to hear. Also, my height is kind of prohibitive to that. But you know, I liked watching it. I will say, and sorry, Callum, I'm kind of stepping on your response here, but I will say I was kind of transfixed throughout the movie, trying to figure out if Wesley Snipes and Woody Harrelson were actually playing or if they had stunt doubles or whatever, which I'm sure we'll get into later. But Callum, tell us about your, history with street ball, mate.
Yeah. Look, I don't really have an extensive history either, in terms of playing. I played some casual basketball. Like I played a fair bit of like one on one with friends and that sort of thing, and 2-on-2. And it's similar rules, namely none. So you can shove, you can elbow, you know, you can do everything that would be a violation in the professional game, and that's all that all goes. And I think they did a decent job in portraying. I think especially in that 2v2 tournament, they had a referee there, but the referee obviously had no idea what he was doing. because Woody Harrelson and the character that was, you know, guarding him were very much getting into a shoving match. And I thought that was actually good in terms of showing that, yeah, it's a bit more cavalier in terms of rules and that sort of thing, but it's ultimately about basketball and about, you know, skillful players and that sort of thing, and kind of an interesting dichotomy we saw throughout this sort of film is Sydney's... well, perceived priority of being flashy, and Billy's priority of winning, right? And seeing how that kind of goes against each other throughout their relationship and throughout the film and that sort of thing. And I found that element quite interesting, especially in regards to how they shot those particular basketball scenes. I don't know if it was intentional, but there were some parts where both players were kind of hypocritical.
Yeah, I agree. I think that you're spot on. I think that it really sort of captured like without knowing too much about like how street ball is as well. Like I haven't been involved in street ball. I think that I haven't
really.
Yeah, really.
Wow.
Yeah.
The three of us.
I feel like though, like I'm gonna step on toes of future segments. If I just went through with that thought, but. Hopefully I remember it. But yeah, I think that like the only time that I would have seen possible street ball is when I was in New York and like we were going through, I think it was Queens or something like that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there was people playing basketball out there and it looked like it was sort of like that street ball, like sort of 2-on-2 sort of environment. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like a full-on game or anything like that. So I didn't take any notice of it. That was back in 2012. So anyway, I don't really know what I'm getting at here, but I think that, you know, like the basketball, besides probably like the more like pushing, shoving, fighting, it seemed like it was all fair. I think like the trash talk was more than, you know, fair as well in terms of like how that would happen definitely on a street ball circuit.
Absolutely. The trash talk was fantastic.
All right. Well, I think that you've wanted to know about how Wesley Snipes and Woody Harrelson appeared to play basketball.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Let me know, man.
All right. So it did take a lot of practice.
Right.
Obviously, for these non-professionals. And so to help, the production team hired Bob Lanier, Lanier was a Hall of Famer who spent most of his time with the Detroit Pistons. And so he actually helped Wesley Snipes and Woody Harrelson to become basketballers, essentially. I think Woody Harrelson had some experience playing at college, but that was all. And, yeah, apparently, according to Lanier, on all the basketball instructors on this movie, Wesley Snipes and Woody Harrelson reached the skill level to be able to start for an NCAA Division III team.
Wow. And I've got to say, that's super impressive. Fucking Wesley Snipes is jacked in this movie, right? Yeah. He is built like a brick fucking shit house. It is impressive. That's another thing that was distracting me. I was like, this man is not missing a day in the gym, yeah. Right?
No, true.
So is this to say that they did actually play, like all the scenes are actually them?
Yeah, I think so, because, you know, so like, yeah, a lot of people were quick to note that like Snipes was a good athlete, but it's obviously different being a basketball athlete. And so even with all the practice, Snipes couldn't quite get the hang of it. And yeah, they sort of, Rob Ryder, who was a consultant on the film, said that they stayed within his, so Wesley Snipes, limitations and ended up fooling a lot of people.
Yeah, right. And yours so, truly included. Yeah, absolutely.
And yeah, similarly to Harrelson, Lanier suggested that he and Harrelson play one-on-one. Like I said, Harrelson was saying that he was pretty confident because of his basketball career in college.
Right.
And yeah, he's matched up against Lanier, and Lanier said, oh, sorry, Harrelson said that his matchup with Lanier was the most embarrassing 15 minutes of his life. But yeah, I think getting back to it, I think that a lot of it was choreographed, but Ron Shelton actually, for the purposes of the story, like, you know, they were choreographed, but Ron Shelton actually shot the choreographed stuff and asked the filmmakers to continue to roll, not stop the recording, and just, you know, let the cameras roll, just say to the actors, play basketball as you would, and take it seriously though, but play as you would. And these games got quite intense, but they actually paved the way for all these scenes to be shown in the movie. And so yeah, there was a mix of choreographed stuff, mix of stuff that, of just them playing, and I think that really made it a bit more realistic too.
What a sweet gig. I miss my calling. You know, they could have just chucked the camera on, give me the rock, and I'll just play the game, and, you know, I could be getting residuals 30 years later. I'm robbed.
It's not too late, Stewie.
I actually want to just quickly draw back to the way basketball was played.
Sure.
And that's interesting to hear that Bob Lanier actually, you know, trained them up and coached them and that sort of thing. I also imagine he trained them up and coached them in terms of what good trash talking would be. So I think there's probably just a whole element of having an actual pro there who's probably played street ball, you know, obviously played at a professional level and that sort of thing, would actually help inform kind of the way the interactions in the film go.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, I'll just add on a bit more as well. And that is that, so Snipes said that they played basically 6 days a week on court, learning new moves, becoming familiar with Ron Shelton's playbook, basketball playbook, and that was obviously all to ensure the scenes didn't look completely choreographed, obviously. And so, yeah, I think that you know, studying up, being trained by basketball professionals as well, like, it all contributed to an authentic look at or feel about them being portraying basketball players.
Absolutely.
All right, well, yeah, I think that's all that we come to about, you know, how the game is actually played on the screen. I just have a couple of things in terms of, yeah, the depiction of the sport, and that is that before the second hustle game, Sydney declares the game to be make it or take it, meaning a team retains possession of the ball after scoring a basket. However, after Billy makes the first shot of the game, their opponents, who are Robert and Zeke, take possession of the ball. So that was wrong in that regard. And something else that was wrong, Gloria was wrong. Yeah.
Alex Trebek was wrong. Is that what you're saying?
Not so much Alex Trebek, Gloria.
Gloria was wrong. Gloria was wrong. One of the questions she answered, she got wrong.
No. So while playing Double Jeopardy, Gloria interrupts Alex to answer a question about popes. The rules of Jeopardy do not permit a contestant to respond until the answer is read aloud in its entirety.
Callum, who do they think they are that they can get these things past us? You know? If it's not direction, Jace's got the game show rules locked down.
You can't get Jeopardy past us. There's a lot of people who follow Jeopardy quite religiously. Yeah. Gloria included. So, you know, that kind of
yeah, so she should have known, right? Know that. All right, we will now go into looking at the cast list of this movie. And I'll just give you the main couple, main four, I think. And they are Wesley Snipes as Sidney Dean, Woody Harrelson as Billy Hoyle, Rosie Perez as Gloria Clemente, and Tyra Farrell as Rhonda Dean. Thinking about those four actors and their characters, what did you make? And if there was anyone else that you wanted to mention who appeared in this movie, you can mention them as well. But what did you make of the cast list?
Go for it, Callum.
I thought they all did a really good job. I thought, you know, in terms of in films, you have not very much time to establish the relationship between like characters who are in a relationship. So, you know, obviously Gloria and Billy, Sidney and apologies, her name escapes me. Right,
Rhonda.
But Sidney and his wife. So I think they did a good job in like showing sort of the depth or the lack thereof of each relationship in the establishing scenes between the two of them. So, you know, it seemed like Sidney had been in his relationship for a longer time, you know, had a child, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, I mean, I think Billy had been in a relationship for a long time as well, but it was more like their situation, I guess, was less stable, which meant that their relationship was less stable. So I thought they did a good job of portraying that. And I think they all interacted with each other quite well. And I think that that really helps in terms of, especially a sports film where it's really important to get the interaction between the characters right between the action scenes. I thought they did a pretty good job.
Yeah, I thought the cast was good. I've got a bit of a hot take though, right? Rosie Perez, gorgeous woman, particularly in 1992 when this movie came out. Fucking Gloria has got to be the worst character, man. Oh my God. Just, there were so many times last night when I was watching it and I was like, this girl is a fucking nightmare. I would not want to be within 500 feet of her. I mean, she makes some good points and, you know, Billy is problematic in a whole nother way. But, oh my God, man, she just shits me to tears. She shit me to tears when I was a 10-year-old watching this for the first time. I'm almost 40 and she still shits me to tears now.
Yeah, no, I was there with you when you were saying this last night, Stewie. And, you know, for some of it, like, I agreed. You know, like, some of it was just, like, completely out of hand, not needed. But, again, like, you can kind of understand where she's coming from, you know, at the best of times as well. You can. Like, if my partner came home and lost, you know, $5,000 of all our money, like, I'd be upset.
Well,
I'd walk out.
She's sitting at home reading encyclopedias. Fucking go get a job at Macca's or something. Jesus Christ, she pissed me off. You're right, though. Like I said, Billy is problematic, but Gloria is the fucking worst, man. All time, one of the worst characters ever.
Callum, what's your take?
I think that was part of the idea. I think they wanted to present that both characters were quite flawed, hence, you know, that was a big contributing reason why their relationship was flawed.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Billy had a lot of issues with, you know, how he perceived women and in terms of respect and that sort of thing. And that's, you know, obviously a really big deal. And it's kind of ahead of its time in terms of discussing that kind of domestic setting, I suppose. But yeah, look, I can definitely see Stewie's perspective of Gloria being quite unreasonable in situations, because the way she was presented, I mean, maybe it's not the case in the movie lore, but the way it was presented was, yeah, she was just at home reading crosswords, practicing for Jeopardy, right?
Yeah.
Which is a long shot at the best of times. So a lot of the times when she said, Billy, wake up, Billy, get a job, stuff like that, you kind of think of, well, you know, maybe you ought to take some of your own advice in that situation.
Anyway, just to really drive my point home, right? She wakes Billy up, right? He's asleep. She wakes him up, says, "Billy, I'm thirsty." And he goes, gets up, gets her a fucking glass of water, brings her a glass of water, and she turns it into this, just this stupid thing.
My mouth is dry. Honey, I'm thirsty.
There you go, honey.
When I said I was thirsty, it doesn't mean I want you to bring me a glass of water.
Doesn't?
You're missing the whole point of me saying I'm thirsty. If I have a problem, you're not supposed to solve it. Men always make the mistake of thinking they can solve a woman's problem. Makes them feel omnipotent.
Omnipotent? Did you have a bad dream?
It's a way of controlling a woman.
Bringing them a glass of water?
Yes. I read it in a magazine. See, if I'm thirsty, I don't want you to bring me a glass of water. I want you to sympathize. I want you to say, Gloria, I too know what it feels like to be thirsty. I too have had a dry mouth. I want you to connect with me through sharing and understanding the concept of dry mouthedness.
This is all in the same magazine?
It's a control.
Shut up.
See? Make me sick.
Honey, don't give me the rollover, okay? When I say I'm thirsty, it means if anybody in the room has a glass of water, I'd love to have a sip. When I say I want to make love, it means let's screw.
That's exactly the kind of thing I thought you would say. Besides, I don't like the word screw, okay? I prefer make love or fuck. Screwing is for carpenters. Oh, you're gonna get it. Oh, honey. Oh. Where you going?
Anywhere. Get the hell away from you, psycho Chiquita nutcase.
Oh, come on, honey. Come back. I want to make love. Honey, come back. I want to screw.
And I was out on her. From that second, I thought, get me the fuck away from Gloria, please.
Yeah. No, I see your point. I do. Like, you know, it's, like I said, like, she just, like, drew long bows in terms of, like, you know, how, you know, Billy was treating her and stuff. Didn't feel like, you know, felt like he needed to treat her better at times. But, yeah, sometimes, you know, you need a good hard look in the mirror.
Yeah, yeah. She does need to have a long, hard look in the mirror. Anyway, casting what ifs?
Yeah, sure. Let's go into it.
So, what about... This is fun, Callum. I don't know if you've done this before, but I'm going to tell you guys who almost got the role, and then you're each going to tell me if you think it'd be a better or worse movie. As I alluded to earlier, Wesley Snipes and Woody Harrelson were not the original names on the marquee. The original names on the marquee, the first choice for the director for the role of Sidney Dean was Denzel Washington. For Billy Hoyle, the first name on the marquee was Charlie Sheen. This movie could have been Denzel Washington, Charlie Sheen, 1992. Does the movie work?
With Charlie Sheen, I think so.
Mm-hmm.
With Denzel Washington, possibly not.
Okay.
I think that... You know, Charlie Sheen, Wesley Snipes, they were teamed up together in 1989 for Major League. We've done that movie on Goals on Film before.
Check and that one out. It's a good time.
They had some really good chemistry. So I feel like if you were able to revisit that, reunite them and revisit that chemistry that they did have on Major League, I feel like White Men Can't Jump could have been really good. Better or worse? I reckon on par.
On par. You fucking fence sitter. Well, what about you, Callum? What do you got for us, mate?
I definitely see Jason's point in terms of chemistry building and that sort of thing. I think just throughout that kind of period, Wesley Snipes was really good at building chemistry with his co-stars and a lot of his films and that sort of thing. But I'm actually going to go the other way and say I thought Denzel would have been a better Sydney than Wesley Snipes was. Maybe it's just in terms of I've seen a bit more of Denzel Washington than I've seen of Wesley Snipes, to be completely fair. Mm-hmm. But I think he would get the kind of tough but also have a good heart vibe, maybe a little bit more on the money than mm-hmm. Wesley Snipes did. I don't think he wasn't on the money on it. Like, I think that did come across, but I think it took you a little while before you kind of got to the point of, oh, Sydney's actually not horrible, you know? Because for the first 20 minutes, first 20, 30 minutes of that movie, you're like, oh, I really don't like this guy. and like, maybe that was intentional, but I don't know. I feel like a part of it was trying to show that he was kind of a man of the people and a helpful kind of person. And I think Denzel would have done a really good job in presenting that. And I think in terms of Woody Harrelson actually having the basketball background, it's hard to beat that in terms of, you know, typecasting, because yeah, Charlie Sheen, he's done sports films and he's looked very good, but he doesn't have a college basketball background. He's not mm-hmm. a very tall man as Woody Harrelson is. Mm-hmm. So I think just in terms of picturing, like trying to match the actors with the characters, I think the idea of a Washington and Harrelson film could have been very, very good. And I think it might have been better than how this film ended up.
Wow. Hot take from Callum over here. I'm going to say, because I'm just going to get involved because I don't have any other casting what ifs. There were a few other names that were bandied about for Billy Hoyle. David Duchovny is mm-hmm. one that I read, and there's a couple of
Keanu
others.
Reeves.
Keanu Reeves was the other one. Yeah. That's right. But I actually think Denzel probably wouldn't work. It's very different to this kind of stuff that Denzel was doing in the early 90s, that's for sure. And Charlie Sheen, I'm not sure if that would work too. To Callum's point, he's good in sports films. I don't think he has the height. And also, Woody Harrelson plays a fucking nerd really, really well. And I don't know if Charlie Sheen could do the same sort of thing. Like, he could do like a Ricky Vaughn style outcast, maybe a la Major League, but I don't think he could have been down on his luck Billy Hoyle in this movie. Anyway,
I think for me, like, it's all about swagger.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, like, so yeah, when I said that Denzel might not have been the right fit for Sydney Dean and Wesley Snipes was, I feel like Denzel Washington wouldn't have had quite the swagger for Sydney Dean that Wesley Snipes did have. And similarly, like, I feel like Charlie Sheen and maybe Keanu Reeves, maybe David Duchovny, you know, like, they might have had like the swagger and the look, but like not the look that was needed for the character of Billy Hoyle.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I feel like, yeah, like, I feel like the look of the character, you know, played into this film a lot, between, yeah, Billy Hoyle, Sydney Dean. And so I feel like, yeah, they're just sort of like one and the same sometimes with a few of these casting what ifs.
Mm-hmm.
That, yeah, I just see that, you know, Woody Harrelson is that much different to what Wesley Snipes was. And I feel like any of the other casting what ifs that we have mentioned, like, they'd be too similar that they wouldn't work as the opposites.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Yeah, but I think it was like coming back to it, I said it at the start too, Wesley Snipes, Woody Harrelson, that partnership just worked. Both of them played these characters to great effect. You know, you'd believe them in it, both of these roles, if these people were actual real life people in these real life situations. The characters, not Stewie, not the actors. I know the actors are real. I saw you looking at me. But yeah, I think that, you know, those two obviously had that chemistry before. They were able to display it in this movie, and I really like those two castings and their portrayals of the characters.
I like how they're real life people.
Awesome. So we get to the prompt where we ask if there was a relatable character to you in this movie. Have you guys given this any thought? And if so, which character is it?
Um, Maybe, I guess the obvious answer is Billy, right? Billy Hoyle. Everyone's been down on their luck, sort of chasing a dream. Mm-hmm. Actually, just right out of fucking left field, because I was just shitting on her before.
Yeah.
But Gloria, right? Because she wants to get on Jeopardy. She's studying so hard. She's trying so hard. And, you know, it's just dumb fucking luck that she gets on there. But regardless, result, right? So I feel like I've been there before, not with Jeopardy, but other things. I work really hard to... you never know. I worked really hard to get something and, you know, and then I, you know, bore the fruits of my labors. So, yeah. Surprisingly, even to me, Gloria is my relatable character. Fucking kill me now. What do you got, Callum?
I think in terms of the character who I most empathize with, is Rhonda Dean. I think, you know, the fact that your husband kind of seems like he's not prioritizing your young family is quite difficult. You know, you're living in a tough... It almost looked like a motel. I don't even entirely know what the whole situation was. But you're living in a tough situation. You're trying to raise your child. And it's obviously dangerous because, you know, they get robbed in the film. We see that. So I think in terms of having a partner, not that I personally relate to this, but I could see it happening. Having a partner who's just isn't committing to anything in particular in terms of how they're going to, you know, make money and have a stable income and a stable future and that sort of thing. I can definitely see that, and I think a lot of how she reacted to the decisions that Sydney made, particularly earlier in the film, made a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. I do think that where they're living was quite dangerous.
What about you? He's like the cat that got the cream in, mate. Fucking swallowed like a Cheshire cat with that one.
Yep.
What do you got, Jace?
I'm going to say Billy Hoyle. So I kind of referenced it that I'd come back to it earlier in this episode. I feel like Billy's quite out of place, especially on the street ball when he first goes to that first game and when he stumbles upon it. He's just sitting there in the stands. And I feel like if there was any person in a street ball match who needed to pick someone out of the crowd to be as shit as they are, I feel like then pick me.
But they don't know about your badass granny style free throws, bro.
Don't bring that up again. Maybe they're in the street ball rules. I'd probably get shot if I did those, actually. But
we need to play basketball if we meet in person. That's going to be great.
Oh, it will be. Just you wait till I bring out the granny style free throws, Callum. And if you don't understand that reference, listen back to last week's episode, semi-pro. Oh, but yeah, Billy, I think like for that reason, like in all seriousness, for that reason, yes. Mm-hmm. But like you said as well, like down on luck, you know, like I've been known to gamble sometimes. Lose a bit of money that way. I've been known to, you know, I can't dunk either. So
you can't dunk?
No, I can't.
Wow. No. Can you, Callum?
I can't, no. I can touch the ring, but I can't dunk.
Yeah. Wow, show off. I can't even touch the ring.
But, yeah, that's who I related to in this movie. All right, we get to our final prompt of this episode and asks if you could have a movie get made, a basketball movie get made, what would it be about and why would you make it?
That's a great question. And my perspective here, I actually have two ideas. My first idea is a film about the NBL and its kind of rise to prominence since its most recent owner came in. You know, it was kind of known as, I'd say the B sport, but that would honestly be complimentary for how the NBL was during probably the late 2000s, early 2010s. No one watched it. No one was interested. There was hardly any broadcast coverage, right? Now it's got a dedicated deal on ESPN. It's got a growing fan base. And in terms of its social media reach, it's doing really well. So I think maybe a film about kind of what changed in the NBL and how it became more popular would be really interesting. But by the same token, I don't know how many people would watch it because it's still in the process of that rebuild. So maybe we just wait 15 years, and then when the NBL is the bona fide second best basketball league in the world, then we can go and watch that film, and I can be in it.
Yeah, well, I accidentally said last week that Coffee Black from Semi Pro was dreaming on making it to the NBL. So if we can get someone like Coffee Black, Andre 3000, to the NBL, I think that movie gets made sooner rather than later. But Stewie, your movie.
Oh, yeah, my movie. So, as you might remember, last week I said I wanted to see Scottie Pippen's version of The Last Dance, given the beef between himself and Michael Jordan. And this week I'm going to say I want to see Luke Longley's version of The Last Dance. Yeah. Beat that.
I wonder what your film idea next week will be. Pick another basketball player that was in The Last Dance.
We should take bets. Yeah, is it going to be Steve Kerr? Is it going to be Dennis Rodman?
You're giving them ideas, Callum.
Thanks, mate.
My movie idea would be a remake of White Men Can't Jump.
Oh.
Starring Jack Harlow.
You're not going to believe this.
With the same actors as well, Wesley Snipes and Woody Harrelson.
No, we're not talking about that remake that is in post-production now or anything like that, are we?
No.
So therefore, my movie, I've been thinking about this for a bit, but my movie would be a team needs to travel to a game, but something happens along the way. They can't reschedule the game at all. But luckily, there's a college team, high school team, willing to step in to the game. And they play this professional team and they end up winning. But I think points won't matter. But they end up winning anyway. But yeah, that would be my idea. So this team gives players sort of one-game contracts just because they're there at the venue. They come in, play a professional team, win.
Sounds good. I'd watch it. I think mine wins, though.
All right. We'll try again next week. All right, that brings us to the end of the episode now. So, Stewie, Callum, would you like to share your social media handles and any other avenues or platforms where our listeners can see or hear you?
Yeah, for sure. So best place to find me on social media is Twitter, @Callum_Logie. Also, if you're interested, take a look at the Top Edge podcast. It's Edge of the Crowds cricket podcast. We talk about all the news across world cricket, and it's really good fun. Rory and I, we just sit down, we have a chat, and we kind of speculate on all the great things that can happen in world cricket, particularly in terms of Australians around the world. We're doing the IPL, and it's been really fun. So, yeah, give that a listen if that's something that tickles your fancy.
You can find me at Stewie is Sick of It on Twitter. You can find me at Stewie the Sports Guy on Instagram and TikTok. And you can see a video of my ex-cat, Moxie, who unfortunately I had to give away, but I watch it oftentimes, have a little cry, and just wonder how she's doing right now. Yeah. Anyway, you can also read my stuff on Edge of the Crowd. The Australian World Cup podcast is set to make its triumphant return very, very soon. Sneak peek. I think there might be a similar team on the very first episode. And that's it. Where can we find you, Jace?
In terms of social medias, I'm at Jace Erbs on Twitter, Instagram and TikTok. You can also read any of my articles at The Barrier Truth, which I'm sure is the same for you, Stewie.
No, I don't write there anymore.
Oh, okay. Well, that's news to me. Yeah. Breaking that news to me now. But this isn't the only podcast that we do together either, Stewie.
Of course, yeah. I really got knocked off of my game when I started thinking about my ex-cat, Moxie. It made me real sad. So pick up the slack for us, Jace. Pump it up.
All right. Well, we are on the Red Dirt Roundup, which is a podcast brought to you by The Barrier Truth. And, yeah, we just talk about all things sport in Broken Hill, interview a couple of guests as well, whether they're more widely known, outside of Broken Hill or inside Broken Hill. We're focusing on the AFL Broken Hill season right now and interviewing all the coaches. So if you do want to listen to that, please go over to Spotify and Apple Podcasts to do so. You've been listening to Goals on Film. You can find Goals on Film on Twitter and Instagram at Goals on Film Pod. You can also subscribe to our YouTube channel where we'll be posting weekly video highlights after each episode. Goals on Film is part of the Edge of the Crowd network. You can find Edge of the Crowd on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and LinkedIn at Edge of the Crowd. You can also view any of our stories, be it sport, culture, or politics, on our website, www.edgeofthecrowd.com. If you've got time, please consider giving us a 5-star rating and leaving a review on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And if there's any films that you'd like us to do on Goals on Film, please also let us know. Until next week, thanks for listening.
Yeah, I'm just going to look directly in your eyes, Callum. I'm not even going to look at Jason. Go, Jace.
That's my own fault. Really sorry, Callum.
Man, me and Callum were having a moment there too. What?